closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, it's Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul.
And I'm Simon Carnell. How's everyone doing? Oh yeah, wait, they can't actually reply.
They can, we just won't hear them. That's fine.
It's amazing the habits that get ingrained. How's everyone doing? Which is also the most cliche hack way to open a show anyway.
And I've been doing it for 20 years. It's weird doing these Zoom shows, man. It's great to, I have a couple on the books and I have a bunch I've done, but it is weird and it is getting into a weirder state of being each time. Because like, we were talking about this with Armstrong and a few other people have pointed this out, that in a show, you're giving a lot of energy, but you're also receiving a lot of energy from the crowd. Yeah. And in this case, you're receiving zero energy and it's exhausting. I feel like I'm more exhausted doing a 20 minute Zoom show or a 30 minute Zoom show than I am doing a full hour long regular show. It's very strange.
Yeah. It's one of those things, I think, again, having done a few of them, I was doing something even weirder last night, which was pre-recording a segment for someone who's doing a charity stream variety show and looking for kind of gap fillers that they can put in between the intermissions of pre-recorded stuff. And it was even weirder kind of pre-recording it to be used as though live. And you're getting even less energy because at least on Zoom, you can either see people reacting or see in the chat or, you know, unmute people or do whatever it is. But I think it's very much just one of those things. I remember years ago, I did an Alexander Technique workshop, which is like sort of body posture theory about how to actually like move properly and have good posture and positioning. And it was all just good stuff. It was just, yep, good, solid advice. But one of the exercises the instructor did that stayed with me for, it's been like nearly two decades now, is a lot of this stuff is going to feel unnatural and weird, and that will make it feel bad. And you'll go, oh, this feels wrong. But if you're wearing a wristwatch, which back then most people were, and now many people still are, just a lot of them are smartwatches, take off your wristwatch and put it on your other wrist and feel how wrong and weird and that feels. It feels just so wrong and uncomfortable. But give it a few hours and you'll stop noticing it. Mm-hmm. Like, it only feels natural because it's familiar and you're used to it. If it's new and unfamiliar, it will feel unnatural and uncomfortable. But just give it a while and we can adapt to almost anything. Yeah. Not anything, but almost anything. I think about that a lot with the Zoom stuff.
I'm sure everybody is kind of feeling that too, where it's like, yeah, it's weird at first. And then it was like, I've done a handful of them now where it doesn't feel strange anymore. It's normal. It's actually, the perk is, you know, I have my little office studio and they're the people waiting to see the show and you jump in and then you jump out. And so that's not too strange anymore. I guess just the energy component of it is still what's there. But yeah, the analogy of the wristwatch thing, I think is if you do anything with, you know, if you're non-dominant hand, it seemed very strange. And we are all doing that right now. We're all using our non-dominant hand for everything.
Yeah. But I think when facing those kinds of situations, I find myself, at least on a good day when I have emotional energy to spare, not in a bad day where I'm depressed and frustrated, but rather than focusing on the weirdness and discomfort of it, instead focusing on, okay, what will this feel like once it becomes comfortable and familiar, and what can I do to accelerate the journey to that point? And kind of sort of imagining, what will it feel like when one day I am completely comfortable with this? And try and live that now or as quickly as possible and lean into that.
Yeah, it's been a weird week of that. Like, I had to, when I lived in Florida for about 4 years, I really didn't have any close friends. And now I am in so many Zoom groups and so many like magic book clubs and movie clubs. And I never take it for granted that someone would invite me to be a part of that. But yesterday was the first time I had to just be honest and go, listen, man, I'm so sorry. I can't do it tonight. I've literally been on Zoom for days straight, and I just, it's emotionally and it's exhausting. And it's a very strange place to be in because you never want to take that stuff for granted.
Yeah, I know. The whole It's a Weird New World has been done to death, hasn't it? But we're all still adapting and discovering. I think I read a post by another Magic Castle member talking about how, like, again, in so many ways, it took, like, the destruction of everything in his life. Like, his job's gone, his career's gone, his industry's gone. And that sort of finally let him kind of actually step back and look at things objectively and see things in new ways. And I think a lot of us are finding that in the macro as well as the micro, just about the nature of social interaction, about who our friends are, how we interact with our families and everything like that.
Yeah, I think I would say, yeah, it's had to bring a lot of people closer. Like, I'm getting phone calls from people I wouldn't normally get phone calls from, yeah. Which is great. I think that's a great way to, you know, the best way, I would say, to communicate with people. But it's weird. Like, one day you're fine and you're adapting, and then the next day, you know, as my wife will attest, is just I'm sitting on the couch sobbing watching Good News, the John Krasinski show, because I'm like, what the fuck comes next, man? Like, is live performance dead? And it's like, it's weird. I am craving being in front of a live audience, and I didn't think I would ever crave that. I mean, you listen to episodes past, like, the beginning of the quarantine sessions, and we're like, yeah, who cares? I'm done with shows. But now I'm like, oh, I actually want to do them. And I guess that's good. It reminds you of why the heck you're doing this, because it's very easy to forget.
Yeah. Well, it's like so many things. So many things have a happy amount, and too much of it hurts, and too little of it hurts.
Sure, yeah.
And that was that was the classic thing with all the ships, right? Travel is a wonderful thing. It's one of the greatest, most glorious things and privileges a human being can have. But too much of it is a goddamn nightmare. And it's the same thing, you know, with performing. Too much, horrifying, but too little, just as bad.
Yeah, for sure. It's, I don't know, man. I'm just in such a weird place lately and trying to stay optimistic, because there is... nothing's right. We're fine. We are privileged people living and have families, and, you know, we have friends, but still it's like,
yeah, we're not about to start like singing Imagine in a video. in a tasteless, emotionally tone deaf video.
Oh my god, that was awful. You know, half the people that got put into that were like, oh yeah, sure, I'll do this, and then when they saw the final cut, they're like,
oh god,
please take me out of that. That was so, that was like, that came out real quick too. That was like a week or two into quarantine.
Yeah.
Like, the world isn't, nope, everybody's fine.
I realized the other day, I suddenly got a really good sense of a very clear metric of how much of an introvert I am. That, what are we, 2.5 months into this? I don't even know, like 2 months, 2.5, 3. But whatever
it's
been.
All I know is I've been doing this Shed Show with Taylor every Wednesday on Facebook and YouTube. And we're on like the 12th or 13th episode, and we did think that's how far it would go.
But it was roughly last week was the first time I began to really, like, viscerally miss being able to just go to a coffee shop or a diner with friends and hang out. Mm-hmm. Up until last week, I was all right. It's like, yeah, it'd be nice, but it's okay. Like, that's how freaking introverted I am. That it took me 3 months to start to really start to feel this. Whereas I know a lot of people, it was hitting them within days or a week or two.
Yeah, us too. In that, like, we've always been, my wife and I always kind of been foodies, but we realized that the whole reason we don't really like getting takeout is because it's just the whole process of going to the restaurant, having an evening of something to do, something to look forward to, and a social event. That breaks you away from your technology and your screens and whatnot. We tend to like leave our phones in the car or turn them off during dinner, just to like be present. And now it's like, okay, bringing some food home or making some food in your kitchen, and it's great. And like, I've become a great cook over the past 12 weeks, but man, it's just not the same thing. It's like, it's weird.
Yeah. So what do you find? What have you learned through Zoom shows so far, and or the shed and everything else? Like, what have been the real things that have jumped out?
Taylor Hughes and I got asked to like talk to the Young Magicians program.
You were the week after Shoot and I wanted to join in and watch that, because Shoot said it was a really good session.
No, it was
you guys
great.
Had a lot of really good insights.
Why am I blanking on the name? The junior program at the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
For anyone under 18, is that it?
Under 21, or under 21. 18? I don't know, one of those.
You and I weren't a part of it. Taylor was. So, but it was, they were asking about doing virtual shows, and I guess there are, what the biggest takeaway is, you know, have a kind of a nice set, look like you're not in your living room, which is not easy for a lot of, because I mean, I'm lucky that you and I are kind of lucky where we just like have stuff that we can basically set dress our things, just, you know, lights and cameras and stuff that we use in our regular shows. But the other thing is there are tricks that work better over Zoom. And one is a magazine test that I do that I took out of the show because everybody just kind of assumed it was a trick magazine. Not everybody could examine it. But what's so cool is now I say, okay, pick a magazine, open to any page, and I just bring the paragraph right up to the screen. So everybody gets to see that the magazine's real, and they can choose their own word, which is so cool.
Yeah.
But I figure out the one that the person I'm talking to, and that's not it for every trick. There are tricks that certainly don't work as well, but it is, it's interesting to, if you really sit down and kind of reassess your show, there are tricks and there are elements that work better. So that's maybe the biggest thing I've learned going back to your question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something I've definitely found as well. There are a lot of tricks where examinability could be a problem, either because not everyone can see the thing close up enough to feel they've examined it, or with things that actually can't be examined, but now on Zoom, you don't feel that tension of them not being able to reach out and grab it from you. So you can have sort of things that would otherwise be methodologically precarious, to put it mildly, right up close to the camera, and people really get to see the visuals, and it's still amazing. I think that's with everything, right? Staying flexible and going, yeah, what worked before will not necessarily be the same. Some things are better, some things are worse.
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly don't want to do these long term. And I kind of had an interesting thing that happened to me where I had a friend reach out who works at a company, and they're like, hey, we're thinking about putting on events. And I gave them a rate. And this was in like end of March, thinking this would only go on for like a month or so. And now I realize I just kind of severely undercharged because of the time that I have to put into it. And I'm treating it, you know, like real shows. And I had to, you know, it's never easy to go back and say, I need more money, because you just kind of have to explain, like, this is my real rate. This is what I make for live shows. This is what I'm charging for virtual shows. And luckily they were cool about it. But it's weird because I think a lot of people got caught up in that. In the initial Zoom shows, we're like, yeah, I'll do it for a very low rate. I'm not traveling. I'm going in my house. But for these like corporate events, you know, you're still like having meetings with these people. You're still sending emails. You're still setting up the show. You're trying to customize it. And that it isn't a 45-minute set of time anymore. It's several hours of work and days of work at this point. So that's, I think a lot of people are realizing that with doing these Zoom shows, it's way more time than you anticipated.
Yeah. Well, again, like with always, like the big tip is don't fall into the mistake of charging based on cost rather than charging based on value. Otherwise, you end up so limited in terms of the maximum earning potential.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, so much easier to preach it than do it.
No, it's hard. It's terrifying. And this is something I was talking to the junior program about. And I was saying, you know, Taylor is so good at this type of thing, and I'm terrible at it. I am not good at negotiating. I'm not good at like explaining, oh, here's why you should be paying this price because I've done X, Y, and Z, when in reality, you know, everybody's kind of done something great if they're hiring a professional, I guess, magician in this case.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, there are guys who are so much better at it and do a great job, and that's never been my strong suit. So I'm kind of relearning that right now with these Zoom shows, because I typically book stuff through agents, and now it's a lot more personal, which is weird.
Yeah. I feel that. Something that, I mean, I've managed to do a few times that is super useful if you can find a friend who is, e.g. you were saying Taylor's good at that stuff. See if he'd be down to let you just silently sit in on a call where he does it. Be like, hey, buddy, I'm trying to learn to do this better. Obviously, you know, only if you're comfortable with it. I'd love to, like, listen to you do it. Just, I found that can help so much, just being there for the nitty-gritty of the details.
Yeah, and he's given me so much advice, and he's broken stuff down. But yeah, if you are struggling with that, anyone out there, I would certainly suggest it, you know, reach out to somebody, you know, mentor, but don't do what a lot of people are doing right now, which is someone you haven't heard from in a very long time suddenly calls you up. Hey man, I hear you're doing a Zoom shows. What's your setup? What do you do? It's like, Which I have no problem giving advice and telling people, you know, what has worked for me. But if I haven't heard from you in a year, please don't call me. Because that's happened just a few times. Because I like, you don't want to be a jerk, and you always want to be helpful. But at the same time, it's like, that's very selfish to do if you know, you're not actually close with people. That's how I perceive it.
Yeah. I mean, I always sort of tend to take the policy, anyone's allowed to ask for anything, and anyone's allowed to say yes or no.
Sure.
To that request.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, okay, thanks. No, I'll pass. It's all right.
Just kind of check yourself before you do something like that, because I've had a few of those recently, and it's like, I'm still answering questions, and I'm still helping, but I'm trying not to be a dick. But, you know, in the back of your mind, you're like, I haven't talked to you in a very long time, and now I'm helping you make money, and I probably won't hear from you again.
Yeah, true that. Well, yeah, and I mean, on that, the fact that, as we've discussed extensively, the business of magic is brutal. And if you're not savvy about negotiation, schmoozing, marketing, networking, client relationship management, all that stuff, like, that's actually what's the predictor of success in the magic business, not actual quality of your show. Quality of your show helps, does a lot, but that's a relatively minor thing above a certain very low baseline. Which is why I'm excited by the increasingly viable prospect of becoming a puzzle guy.
Yeah, this brings us to our next point. The whole point brings of this podcast. Brings us to
the big news one for today.
You have apparently, are on track to, or already have broken Kickstarter records with your magic puzzle company?
We already have broken Kickstarter records with our magic puzzle company. We are currently the most... So Kickstarter tracks two main things, backed and funded. Backed is how many people have backed it. Funded is how much money it's raised. Obviously, the funded is a multiple of backed times how much money each person's backed it for, which is often variable. And yeah, we are currently the most backed and the most funded puzzle of all time on Kickstarter in like the games slash puzzle, in the puzzles subcategory of the games category. And we're currently the most popular project on Kickstarter, which I believe is tracked in terms of how many people are looking at it, backing it per time unit. And we've been there for about a week now, sitting as most popular on the entire website. And we are the most, I think we're the most backed, currently active project on Kickstarter as well. Like, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's just been, it's been out of control.
And I mean, that's the positive, but this has sprung up a whole new world of anxiety and issues, the fires you're trying to not have happen.
It's, again, it's amazing. And I will, if I was offered these problems, I would absolutely say, yes, please, I will take these problems in exchange for the success. It's, I've been having to learn to take a 10-minute break every 13 or 14 hours or something, just to like stop and let it go. I have no basis for this comparison, but it's how I've heard some people are with like a newborn baby. It's like, we can't leave it alone for a minute. Like, it might die. We have to keep looking at it. You just can't take a break. It's so stressful. And it is, I mean, first of all, we have the inbound. We have just all the comments on Kickstarter, all that we have to reply to, because timely customer service is really important. We have all the emails coming in. We've had a couple of media contacts. Again, great. We've had comments and questions on our social media. And now that we're running Facebook ads, we're getting questions and comments on those as well. And it's just this nonstop torrent of like, we have to be on top of this. We have to reply in customer service mode. And then it's the... Because there is such a rich history of Kickstarter projects becoming so successful or so big that they end up being disasters. Because the common Kickstarter thing that's happened many times is some people have a cool idea, they make some prototypes of a thing, they've worked out they can do a run of it. If they get enough money to reach the minimums they need, they do a Kickstarter, and then it gets so much bigger than they expected. And suddenly their existing manufacturing, whether it's them in their garage or a small factory somewhere or whatever, can't handle it. So now they need to, either they're looking at like a delay of years while they get them done, or they need to like move to a bigger factory. But then the process of moving to the bigger factory causes more problems, ends up elevating the expenses, and they end up sometimes in a place where they're actually losing money on every unit sold because they didn't factor in all these additional expenses that they couldn't have predicted without knowing it was going to be so big, yada, 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 and they end up like bankrupt because their Kickstarter got so big. And that's not common, but it's also not rare. That has absolutely happened a bunch of times. Or the classic one is they just underestimate how much shipping's going to cost. And so and shipping can be a bastard.
Hmm.
And so they end up having to like pay out of pocket for shipping, where again, like every additional sale is actually now losing them money rather than making them money. And so we've obviously done a lot of work to kind of avoid that up front. But as the thing continues to grow, I keep being terrified where there's going to be something we didn't predict, something we didn't see coming that's going to massively tank this whole thing.
Hmm.
And so far, I think we're okay. We've got a great team behind it. It's really exciting. But yeah, every single day is me going, what's the thing that 3 months from now is going to bankrupt us that we could avoid if we see it coming now and can in early enough to do something about it?
It's a lot of juggling.
Such a weird thing. Yeah. And so on one level, I'm just jumping for joy. This is amazing. And at the same time, I might get a stress ulcer.
Yeah.
It's, both of those can be true simultaneously.
I mean, we're going through something similar where, you know, obviously I was just a part of a small part of a giant team of people, but, you know, Magic for Humans came out on Friday, season 3. And it's like between number 5 and number 8 in, you know, in the US on Netflix, which is awesome. You know, that's like a big deal. But yeah, it's the same thing of it's funny how a lot of the people on the team are just like, you know, rightfully so, sending congratulatory text messages. Hey, this is great. Congratulations. And, you know, and I'm so happy it's been successful, but I am just not trying not to forget the hours of work and, you know, anxiety and stress and, you know, hard work everybody put into it. 'Cause it's so easy to just, you know, something we talk about all the time on the podcast, so easy just to see, you know, the tip of the iceberg, but you know, you miss everything underneath it. I mean, I think it's a metaphor you've used many times. So,
Well, I mean, as you know, and many people who are longtime listeners of Two Mag, One Mic know, like this jigsaw puzzle thing is, I've been working on this for just over a year. It was April last year where we went, you know what? We should make some jigsaw puzzles with a magical ending. And, you know, I've made a few cryptic allusions to it in the past because we couldn't really, didn't want to talk about it till it was actually a real thing in the world. And yeah, it's been a year, a solid nonstop year of working on this thing in between all the other projects and everything, chipping away at it. And some of that year was, first it was figuring out how to do the illusion. Can we make a jigsaw puzzle, do a magic trick? Step one, that took months to work out and lots of months of mathematics and design and prototyping and experimenting. And then it was, okay, can we get the art that we need for it done? So then it was like finding artists, hiring the artists, sort of managing them back and forth while they did the art. That took a few months. Then it was also working out, can we get these manufactured? How do you make jigsaw puzzles? Can they be made to do the thing we need? How do we get that figured out? That was months. And then it was prepping for the actual launch and preparing for the Kickstarter and doing all the promo stuff. That was months of work. And here we are, and it's, God, I mean, the amount of times I've spent a year working on something and it's really just gone nowhere. It's so deeply gratifying that I finally spent a year working on something and it's going somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty cool. And I'm pretty excited that, you know, it's taken off, and I'm glad we can actually discuss what it is. Yeah, for the longest
time. Yeah, I know, right? This is like secret project.
He wouldn't even tell me. I didn't know what the hell it
was. Yeah, we definitely wanted to keep it. You know, it's like until a thing's a real thing, there are so many potential liabilities if you start putting it out there beforehand, even just looking dumb if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And God knows, we've all had plenty of those.
Yeah, in our lives. I'm really bad, as my wife can tell you. I'm really bad at keeping secrets, which is ironic.
Normally, you know. Me too. That's this one I've tried really hard.
It's our 6-year wedding anniversary next Sunday, and I accidentally alluded to a gift I got. And I just like... stopped talking and walked out of the room quietly. It's really hard to do that.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign when a person struggles to keep secrets. It's a sign of good character.
I try to tell myself that.
even though secrets are sometimes good and worthwhile, it's like white lies. You know, a lie for a good healthy reason, but it still comes with sort of like an emotional debt to it. It's like, oh, I distorted the truth.
That's I just want to make sure it's not an ego thing where it's like I need gratification because I did something good or because I'm working on something good or like people need to know about X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Well, I mean, God knows that's a temptation, right? For even the best people, like wanting that ego gratification.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a trap. It's a trap none of us are immune to.
Speaking of ego gratification, if you like the show, you can give us $1 or $2 a month on Patreon. We've had a bunch of extra new supporters. Thanks for everybody who's done that. That's really nice.
That's cool. Is that ego gratification or financial gratification? I guess it's both. It's kind of both. It's almost like the actual emotional gratification is more than the financial gratification. someone gives you a dollar, that means a lot more than the dollar actually represents. It's like, mm-hmm. hey, a person actually cared enough to type their numbers into a website. That's the crazy thing about this Kickstarter as well, because we've got, I think we just passed 30,000 backers and climbing, which is nuts. I mean,
wow.
I'm losing track of what numbers mean. It's amazing. But what that signifies, because if someone has, say, 30,000 followers on Instagram, that's a lot. That's a big number. It's not millions, but that's significant. But that's just someone who clicked follow on Instagram. These 30,000 people are people who saw the thing and then gave us money.
Yeah, that's a big difference. Like,
that's a huge difference. That's such a higher level of commitment and belief. And it's, we've been doing, one thing we've been working really hard on in the past 2 weeks that's been running is trying to do daily or every second day, very frequent backer updates with kind of cool, fun things. We're like hiring a bunch of our magician friends, and some people are doing it as a favor, others we're paying. Like, we've gone to everyone, we're happy to pay you, happy to owe you a favor, happy to, like, whatever, let us know what you need. And a lot of people have done both.
Just but like to do kind of point cool... out that Simon Cornell has never asked me to do it.
We're getting there. We're talking about it.
It's okay. I don't have time. I literally passed on an editing project to my brother that my dad wanted done because I'm like, I don't know when I'll get to this.
Yeah. It's been a crazy time.
But, I think we're both up to our nose in things that don't pay us money. By the way, watch Live from the World Headquarters every Wednesday on Facebook Live with Taylor Hughes.
Yeah. Check it out. It's good stuff.
Sorry.
But yeah, we've been trying to do backer updates with kind of cool, fun, magical things to say thank you to these people for supporting the project and also to kind of show them that we care. Like, I think that's a really important thing. Even if, like, we've got their money, we're going to give them their puzzles. That's the deal. But I think there's a lot of value in showing, letting them feel how much we do actually really appreciate and value that. And it's been interesting because it's also led to one of the other weird problems it's led to is in all the backers, we've been doing these much more regular updates than normal to kind of do all these cool magic videos and fun interviews with the artists and things like that. And a lot of people have commented going, we love these. Oh my God, these updates are so much fun. I get so happy each day when they're in my inbox. But about maybe 5 to 10% of the comments have been people going, please stop spamming me with these things I didn't ask for. I want to give you money and get puzzles. Like, I'm not here for random magic tricks, which was really confronting because we don't want to spam anyone, right? You don't want to make anyone sad. But at the same time, a lot of people were being really happy about them. And then what do you do? And then we started to notice people in the comments were arguing with each other. Someone is like, please stop spamming me with updates. And then people who were pro updates would be responding to them going, like, you can just delete the email. It's not a big deal. Like, calm down. And this sort of little kind of war was developing in the backer comments. And we were going, oh God, what do we do? What do we do about this? Like, do we... And it was a whole... We figured out eventually what to do about it.
These are the same people so weird. That give 3-star reviews. Like, we went to one of our favorite restaurants yesterday, and we're looking at, you know, the menu, and underneath it shows reviews, and someone gave it a 3-star review. And I forget what the joke, what I wrote yesterday that I didn't post, but it was just something along the lines of, you know, the people that aren't taking this seriously are the same people that give 3-star reviews at restaurants. It's like, give 1 or 5. I mean, it was either great or it was terrible. Why are you wasting your time giving 3-star reviews?
Well, I mean, hang on. I mean, it depends on what the review is for, but I can think of places I've been that were 3-star that was like, it was adequate. It was fine. Like, I think that's sometimes that's, I think that can be worthwhile. Like, there's 5 options for a reason. 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5.
To me, it's like, why? I just don't give a review. Just yeah. Don't go back there. It's a Seinfeld joke. It's like, you know, they ask you, how was the food? You never tell them it was bad. You just don't come back to the restaurant.
And then what?
You're not
going to
get into an argument.
Leave a 1-star review.
Yeah, you're not going to give an argument of, like, I don't know. It's.
Well, I mean, if you think, to be fair, like, not devil's advocate, that's the wrong phrase.
No,
like,
you have a great point, but that my point is that 3-star reviews are stupid.
Well, in that case, the problem should be with the reviewing system. Tell them to move from a 5-star system to a thumbs up or thumbs down system.
Yeah.
Like, that's the problem. If a person is given 5 options, they have an equal right to all those options as their choice. In that case, I think it should be only give 2 options, thumbs up or thumbs down.
But at the same time, thumbs up, thumbs down, I don't like as much on you.
Doesn't give enough granularity, does it?
It's true. It does simplify it. But
almost like you want more options in between, like a two or a three or a four, doesn't it?
You have changed my opinion. I have grown as a human being because you have changed my opinion. Thank you.
I mean, I can think of times where I've been looking for a restaurant. I'm on Google Maps. I'm like, I feel like some, I don't know, bagels. And if I see that there's like, you know, there's a 1-star bagel place and a 3-star bagel place, I'm like, cool, I'll go to the 3-star place and have low expectations. I mean, I'm expecting an adequate, unremarkable bagel at a 3-star place.
I guess it's, you know, more so like the paragraph that I read from this person was, it was a little bit of a pretentious atmosphere.
Yeah, okay. Well, that person's a wanker then.
Yeah. I don't know. You are absolutely right. There should be options. But I always go back to the Anthony Bourdain thing of like, rating restaurants is the death of restaurants. If you've never seen his rant on it, go to YouTube to like Anthony Bourdain talking about, you know, rating restaurants. And it's like, one person could just have a bad day and it can just ruin the whole rating. You know, it can tank a restaurant because one person's a moron.
And that's really relevant, because that's something once we started getting really stressed about the comments we were getting and going, oh God, you know, are we angering these people? Are we offending people? Ah, are we bad? Oh God. We spoke to a bunch of people who are sort of much more experienced in this kind of thing. You know, people we know who run big Kickstarters or whatever. And, the reminder was that most of the time, not always, you always got to check and think about it, but most of the time when someone leaves an angry, negative comment, it's not about you. It's about they're having a bad day, their life sucks, they're sad, they're in pain, they're hurting, they're lonely, they're miserable, whatever it is, and you just happen to be the lightning rod that they're earthing that in at this moment. Now, also check that you aren't actually doing something fucked up. Like, yeah, that could also be a possibility. But unless there's an obvious thing that you're doing wrong, it's most likely that person's just pissed off and venting it on you as a convenient target. And they'll go and vent it on something totally different tomorrow, or like leave a 1-star review for a perfectly adequate restaurant because they're angry.
Yeah, that's one of the agreements in the book, The Four Agreements, is don't take it personally. And I think once you can actually put that into your life in every capacity, and it's so hard when someone's just a jerk to you for no reason, but just not taking it personally. It's clearly something happening on their end.
And what's the book? The Four Agreements.
I'm blanking on the author, but it's very good.
Cool. I'll check it out.
And it's pretty simple. There's only four agreements.
There's only four. That's it. Could it be a booklet? The short version.
It's a book. It's a short book. But
all right, I'm into it.
But yeah, I think I'm blanking up. Is like, don't make assumptions. You know, don't think. Take things personally, and then the other two I am completely blanking on. You can tell it really stuck with me. But
the third one was remember things that you read.
Remember to promote this book. But remember that's the biggest thing I took away with is, you know, don't take it personally.
Yeah. And I think it's also one of those things that for me personally, being a gentleman of science, is it's so much, things like that carry so much more weight when there's actual reason behind them. It's like, yeah, it is most likely that it is actually not about you, that they are actually just having a bad day. And we know that's a recognized known phenomenon where people will do that.
So, sure, yeah. And then, I mean, that's most of the internet comments too. As you know, you've told me famously, you spent time just going on your YouTube, your Fool Us clip and going, all right, time to delete some comments.
Yeah, exactly.
Which don't respond.
There's so many of them. I should go and do a pass of it. But also that it doesn't really matter most of the time. Sometimes it does. Again, like with everything, it's that famous sort of prayer to the gods or the universe or to fate or to your internal self or whatever, that wishing for the strength to change the things you can, the temperance to accept the things you can't, and above all, the wisdom to tell the difference.
I just want to point out, you've said this on this podcast several times, and it's still good. If you haven't listened to all the episodes, this is a free podcast.
It's something I think about frequently, but it's that wisdom to tell the difference. But with the YouTube comments, something that I was talking about a lot with some of the other puzzle company founders, that like whenever we get pissed off about something, like say there's some douchey lame magician on YouTube stealing someone's idea, making a worse version, and then getting lots of views for it, and it's like, oh fuck that guy sucks, and that guy does suck, but that person is only bothering us because our lives weren't where we wanted them to be. I was always realizing if we were happy and successful and fulfilled, we wouldn't really be bothered. We'd still go, yeah, that guy sucks, but it wouldn't be hurting us, we wouldn't be angry about it. And so I always try to steer myself in putting the energy rather on lamenting that that guy sucks, instead focus the energy on like trying to turn my own or our own lives into ones that are good enough, like cleaning up our own garden, sorting out our own affairs.
Yeah.
Because then if you can get them to a good enough point, then again with the Penn and Teller thing, I was on Penn and Teller. It was great. That was really cool. If there are a bunch of negative comments on the YouTube channel, doesn't matter. I got what I needed. I got a happy thing. Those comments can't take that thing away.
And you have to look at the positive in that too. It's like those comments are helping the algorithm. So the more people that comment, the more people will see your video, which is pretty wild.
I hadn't even thought about that.
So just keep them up. Keep the angry people up there, and then more people will see it. And then the happy people will be pleasantly surprised.
And also just genuinely hope that their lives get better. Like, not in an ironic, passive-aggressive way, but a genuine, sincere way. Like, it fucking sucks. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be just having a shitty time and to be venting on somebody else. It's not fun. I would wish that on nobody.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta watch myself in terms of just, like, judgments of others. You know, you got these, like, private text message chats where you'll make jokes between friends and you're like, oh, that was funny, and then you give it an hour or two and go, oh, I kind of feel bad about saying that, I was just making a joke.
Well, again, like with everything, right, there's that happy balance of you can make a sort of vindictive joke in good taste in the right context where it's clearly a joke and people enjoy it, even the recipient, and then it can very easily sort of blur one way or the other. And again, like everything, just staying open, staying flexible, knowing that none of us have all the answers. We're still figuring shit out.
Yeah.
Be compassionate and open-minded.
There you go.
Go, what is it? Go placidly amid whatever that Desiderata text is. I can't remember. the other thing that sticks in my mind a lot, the Max Ehrman's prose poem, Desiderata. If you haven't read it, look it up. It's good shit.
Lots of great books in this episode today that we're getting no promotional consideration for. Maybe they'll give us some money. If not, you can give us money on our Patreon.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
I'm trying to do better to like just because I only like mention the Patreon usually at the beginning or the end of the podcast, and we don't have ads because like I could do the work to get ads, and I'm sure we have enough downloads now where we could probably get real ads. But I just think of all the podcasts I listen to, and all I immediately do is hit the skip 30 seconds button, so I don't have to listen to those ads. So it's like I don't think it's worth it.
They're
making money.
We did when we were preparing the Kickstarter video that came out really well, was really happy with how that turned out. Jordan and I had to do many takes of our segments in that video where we talk to the camera and explain what the puzzles are. And like we did at least like 40 takes each of our separate three sections. It just, we're both bad at talking to camera just to get it right and not look like and sound like complete mutants. And at some point I'm thinking of doing an outtakes version of it, but out of like sheer late night desperation, at one point Jordan was going like, give it more energy. Imagine you're a YouTuber. Like, give it some, you know, amp it up a little bit. And that actually helped. It was like, nudged it up.
Hey guys, but, it's me, Simon.
and then I did a full parody take where I went full YouTube. And I was like, yo, what's up? It's your boy, SC, coming at you with another video. Let's go. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And I have that somewhere in the archives. We might let it out one day.
I got a box. You're going to watch me open this box. That just blows my mind that there are YouTube channels.
Lots of jump cuts.
Yeah, yeah. Taylor Hughes put out a really funny video. If you haven't seen it, look it up, of wanting to be a YouTube success. And his daughter edited it, and it's just perfect. It's very funny. It's just him trying out all these like different YouTube trends, like putting on makeup or, you know, just it's very funny. And opening things out of boxes and... highly recommend it. Look it up. That's another thing you should look up. We should get to the pro tips for today.
Pro tips.
Oh, yeah.
Pro tips.
Oh, wait, what was the pro tip?
Think about your... If you don't have yours, I have mine written down.
Yeah, what's yours? Go.
Mine is if you're doing Zoom shows, this may be obvious to some, but I don't know if it's obvious to everybody. Have a second person running the Zoom conference. You know, make them a co-host. And have them spotlighting people because I'm running videos and music in addition to doing magic tricks from my end. So having my wife running, you know, spotlighting different people who want to help out and interact in the show just makes life a lot easier. And also if like kind of what Simon and I are doing right now, if one of us loses connection, that the co-host will still be in the room. So theoretically, you don't both lose internet, yeah, which I guess is still possible because we're from the same house. But yeah, so there you go. A little pro tip there.
I like it. Another pro tip, actually, for Zoom shows, even if you don't have any funky lighting and sound equipment and everything, again, this is super basic if you already know about it, but if you don't, just make sure you're front lit. Go to the biggest room in your living space, your house, your apartment, whatever, find with the furthest, where the back wall is the furthest away from you, and get some lamps, soft light in front of you and no light behind you. There are better ways to do lighting than that, but if you don't have any actual lighting gear, just get a few lamps far away in front of you, maybe even drape a towel over them to like diffuse the light. Don't do that if it's a fire hazard, be careful, watch out. Don't sue me. And so basically soft diffused front light and no light behind you, and already that will look 1,000 times better. Basically a big cavernous dark void behind you is a very nice looking backdrop if you don't have an actual professional backdrop.
So yeah, we discovered this empty space when we did dark. A test of Magic Showdown. You were just standing in this empty void, but it looked great.
Yeah, looks dramatic. If you, like worst case, try and do something like that. Get the biggest room you can, front light, no backlight, and that will at least be a lot better than nothing.
Yeah, just try to make, if you don't have a green screen, I wouldn't really use the green screen function because it just, yeah. Even though,
oh, no, don't,
it looks.
Even if you have a green screen, probably don't use a green screen. Like, just don't use green. Like, yeah, there's a time and a place for it, but it's a very limited, specific time and a place, and it's probably not what you're doing.
Yeah, and especially for Magic, stuff cuts out, and it looks like something else is happening. So yeah. I would.
And green screen's one of those things that unless you nail it and get it just really great, which is tricky to do, it looks terrible. So it's better just to not do it and have a real world background.
Yeah,
just lit decently.
Yeah, and no matter what, it's calm. Like we use it in our Live from the Shed show, and I use it as a comedy element where I'm putting myself into other, you know, famous talk show sets. And to me, that's fine because it's a joke and it doesn't look funny, perfect.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's not meant to pass.
If you're trying to take it and make it look serious behind you, no matter what, you are not in a professional studio. I don't care how good your lighting is. It's still not going to look perfect because it's Zoom.
Yeah. And again, can work, but it's tricky to make it good. And it's can be that uncanny valley. It's either get it right or don't do it.
It's a distraction too. You don't want to distract from what you're. To me, it's like, okay, the idea, everybody knows you're doing this from home, and you know, the least amount of distractions, I think, the better.
And it can lead to a pretentious environment, which, much like a restaurant, I would give only 3 stars.
Bringing it back to the 3 stars. The Magic Show was okay, but I give it 3 stars because it was a little pretentious.
Pretentious green screen usage.
Yes.
So the other half pro tip I'll give, and this is much more niche, is a lot of people are having trouble because it is difficult running from OBS or other streaming programs into Zoom. Zoom is not great at taking input from other streaming things. There is a way around this that is relatively easy but requires a second computer, which is use computer A to run your OBS or your whatever program you're using. I've only personally used OBS. Like, they're all good. They've all got pros and cons. They're all fine. And you use that computer. You have that be your most powerful computer that's doing all the graphical compositing and overlaying the stream stuff. And then you run that via HDMI out, mirroring the display as though you're exporting to a TV screen or a external monitor. That goes via a capture card into computer B, which runs Zoom. So computer B sees the entire composited stream output of computer A as a webcam input, and that just loads seamlessly into Zoom. And computer B is where you run all the Zoom stuff from. There's no good way I'm currently aware of to run like OBS into Zoom on the same machine. It gets complex and messy and
shitty. No, it doesn't. I've been using Ecamm, but basically you had to, and I learned this, you know, from Taylor and all the guys that have been, you know, doing so much research on this. Like, you have to downgrade to an older version of Zoom and don't let it update itself, because once it updates itself, Ecamm doesn't work. But supposedly it's going to stop working in a month. So I think that's going to be what I do, is exactly what you said. You just use it as an external computer,
HDMI, Elgato or whatever brand HDMI capture card. It just gets around all the driver virtual camera input compatibility bullshit. And it's just a clean HDMI input feed that Zoom thinks is just a webcam, so it just shows it much like an external camera.
That's actually really smart, and honestly, it might be just the way you have to do it.
At least at the moment, until they figure out all this. Because when you've got stuff, you know, computer science background talking here, when you've got a bunch of stuff on the same machine pretending to be cameras and device inputs for the other stuff, it gets messy and complicated.
Yeah.
And they all have not figured that out
yet. For the love of God, stop screen sharing videos on Zoom. I've done a couple now where they'll use that as the intro video, and it freezes, it's choppy, and it's not even worth it. It looks like if that's how you're starting your show, it looks like crap, and it's going to go downhill from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Another reason to go with the double computer, blah, blah.
If you're not using something like OBS or Ecamm to play a video, because then it will look like an actual video. And same with music. You can level off the audio so it you hear the music. If you're just playing stuff through your speakers on your laptop, it looks and sounds like crap, and it's not worth it.
Yeah. It's a complicated world.
Yeah.
And we're all learning rapidly.
My thing is, if we're doing this, just try to do it as close to right as possible. If you're going to add these tech elements in, it's the same as doing a live show. It's if you're going to run your own music, make sure the music fades, make sure it works, make sure, you know, you really know how to use your remote, whatever that will be. And these are such nitty gritty things, but at the end of the day, it really makes or breaks the show, a solo show, if you are trying to run everything yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, a show or any experience is made up of 1,000 little nitty-gritty things that all add up into the one big thing. You know, everything matters.
I mean, especially for tech, if tech falls apart and, A, you don't call it out, it's going to – and I say this, and I know there's going to be possibly this week or next week when I have a couple, you know, more Zoom shows, something's going to go wrong, and I'm just trying to minimize what's going wrong. In my case, I make sure I have – the link ready for Zoom, where if my computer fails, I can jump back on my phone or something like that, to where you have an ability to keep the show going, because now there's just such an extra set of layers and things that could go wrong in the digital world that it's tricky.
Yeah. And again, have a co-host, have your phone or whatever ready to tether your internet. If it drops out, just be ready. Optimists are full of shit. They never. That's an exaggeration. That's not true. But I have far more confidence working with pessimists than optimists, because they've usually thought ahead to all the stuff that can and might and will eventually go wrong, and planned for it. I've always thought. I think we've talked about this before. I've always thought of myself as a generalized optimist. Amazing things are possible. Great things can happen in the world. The future has potential, and you're more likely to achieve those great things if you're really effing pessimistic about all the stuff that's going to get in the way of them happening. That's going to go wrong and screw up in the meantime. Be ready for that stuff, because then you can achieve beautiful, amazing, wonderful things.
Yeah, it's the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing I learned from my mom is, hope for the best, expect the worst. And it's paper, that's depressing, but it's also smart.
I think it's more, to me, is now I genuinely more and more, I don't expect anything. I don't expect good or bad.
Removing expectation.
We don't know what's going to happen. You set yourself up to give yourself the best chance you can of success. You plan for all the things that might go wrong or might not. You just don't know. You have no idea what's going to happen. So you plan for everything. You hedge your bets. You optimize your odds. You go forth boldly, take risks, try it out, and then see what happens and reevaluate from there and keep going.
Yeah,
and
I will say that's the biggest thing I've learned working with you is just remove expectations in every aspect of your life, because then you will never be disappointed. And you'll be less angry at people.
Yeah, you'd be like, all right, let's discover what's going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think it's the only sort of emotionally honest place to be, because otherwise the universe will eventually laugh at you one way or the other. It's because otherwise your expectations, if you have them, will always be wrong to at least some degree. So why have them? Just get out there and try and make the best thing you can happen, and then see what happens and go from there.
And expectations lead to 3-star reviews.
This has been Two Magicians, One Mic.
That's a great way to end. Thank you. I'm glad. See, that's why we're in sync. I knew that was the end, and you called out the ending.
Well, I hear that.
It's like an improv
show. And then we deconstructed it.
Oh, God, this show is so
thanks
meta.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We love you all.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
Unless you leave a 3-star review, then you suck.
We're going to get so many 3-star reviews now on iTunes. Son of a bitch. I've ruined all of this.
Please don't do it just as a bit.
Please don't. It really will screw our rating. We have one 1-star review and like 45 already star reviews.
Already that's messing it up.
It does mess with me because it's a 4.9. I'm like, no, why didn't that one person like us?
Oh God, what have we done?
We're so screwed. Mistake. This episode should never air. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.